I'd like to call to order the regular and supplemental meetings. And the first thing I'd like to do is to recess the supplemental meeting. So let's start with a moment of silence for those that aren't with us anymore. Thank you. The first item we have are the minutes from the last meeting. Do we have any comments or proposed modifications? Not. Can I get a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
The motion carries. The consent agenda, Kelly, any comments on that?
Nothing.
Okay, all very straightforward. Okay, a motion to approve those?
No.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. So now I'd like to go and give anyone who's a guest or a visitor an opportunity to make any public comments.
Go first, 5-star. On the phone, unmute them.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. So let's move on. Now we'd like to move to a report from the audit committee. Bill.
Great. Thank you. Let me introduce in the back. There is Jill Svoboda, the partner from BDO, and Logan Taylor, our manager. Committee just met with them this morning to review the planning for this year's engagement. A couple of highlights really were they declared they are independent of the system, so therefore they can issue an independent opinion. Their major job is to issue an opinion on the financial statements that we have, and not, although they review internal control, we don't get a report on internal controls. The major areas of focus are always the actuarial report, the investments, both public and private, and assessing different risk areas. So those will continue to be the major focus. We will be getting an engagement letter. In that, our fees are fixed at $103,000 versus $100,000 last year, which is a very, very modest increase based on what's going on in the world today in terms of things. I'm seeing 7, 10, 12% increases in other areas. Part of that is they do offshore some of the audit to India for anything that has non-member information. They'll look at some of those systems, not everything, but they do not provide member information offshore. The schedule is a planning schedule. We're starting the audit now in April. The walkthroughs, the looks at the systems, and it'll be done. If everything went according to plan, it would be done in July. However, we've had a consistent history of getting late valuations for private equity interest, and last year we didn't get a report until November. So we're hoping it'll be better, but that's really contingent. Because once those valuations come in, the actuary's got to do their work, and then BDO has to look at those valuations and approve it. So we're looking at probably somewhere between July and November. Hopefully it's faster this year, but time will tell. I think that hits the highlights. Anybody else? Ken? Tina?
That's about right. I mean, one other question I wasn't sure is that the fixed rate was also part of a multi-year from previous years, or is that not a more than one-year engagement?
So we have to re-engage every year, but the year before, the system went out for a competitive proposal, and so we proposed and we locked that in, and we honor that in our proposal. So that's for the 3 years, I think, is what we've been
Yeah.
Now, Armando, any questions?
No, good summary.
Now, Jill, anything you want to add that may not have covered?
No, I think you did it. It's very similar to last year, and as I mentioned to the audit committee, as we get into the details with Brenda and her team, if anything in our risk assessment changes or there are issues that are encountered, we'll follow up with the audit committee and the board as a whole to let you know how that might change our procedures in the audit. And then I just want to let you guys know that we're always
question. Just generically, what I'm hearing is that it's easier to get new cars and appliances than it is to get accountants time and resources right now. And so when we talk about supply chain shortages, I've heard that your industry is as stretched as any. Any comment on that, anything that you would want to give us a heads up on?
Yes. So we definitely are seeing that in the accounting world, public accounting, corporate accounting as well. I mentioned to the audit committee, I sit on the Accounting Advisory Council for Texas A&M, which is where I went to school, and we're seeing it there. There's just not enough students even coming out into accounting. So what we are seeing probably more of is this offshoring, which Bill mentioned, that we are using some offshore resources, but they are restricted in what they can have. We're not going to use them to anything related to member data. But I think you probably will see a lot more of that. The larger accounting firms have been doing that for a while, and, you know, as the resources become more constrained here in the U.S., I expect that will be a bigger part of the professional service firms going forward. We are still hiring. We're always looking for great people, and so hopefully, you know, we'll be able to balance that between the both. But our team for the system is consistent from last year. Logan actually was a senior on it a couple years ago, and he, you know, moved up in with us, and so he's the manager now. Rachel and Matt, who you've met before, both involved as well. And the offshore people who were assigned last year are supposed to be assigned again this year. So we'll keep an eye on that. So we'll do everything we can to maintain continuity and done. So Brenda's team isn't having to start fresh with new people.
Great. We really appreciate it, and we, you know, recognize how stretched things are for you guys right now. So
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Ryan, you're going to give us a portfolio update.
Yep. Thank you. Good morning. Get to the page here. John, you want to flip ahead there? All right. For the portfolio update, we'll start with liquidation of the private market assets, which is, as always, the top priority. We're going to drill down onto this a bit more later in the agenda with AEW, and then we'll do the full private asset review. But we received $9.8 million of distributions in Q1, which was two large distributions, but quite a bit lower than what we've seen each quarter in 2021. We have $25 million or so expected over the next few months by the end of Q2. High level of confidence that those will occur. Moving on to the safety reserve, we gave you guys a notification last month that we're going into drawdown mode. And as part of that, we initiated a $30 million withdrawal from IRM, the short-term core bond manager, to replenish cash. So during this period, instead of pulling money from elsewhere in the portfolio, we'll move money from short-term core bonds within the safety reserve over to cash. So that's part of that plan. The new international small cap equity manager, we'll talk a little bit more about them when we get to the IAC review, but we plan to fund them. Later on in Q2, we're wrapping up contracting with them. It'll be an initial $40 million funding, and that will come from the passive Northern Trust account. Looking at equity markets and the correction year to date, this is showing percent off high through Tuesday, and we can see here, you know, U.S. markets are holding up a little bit better with S&P down about 8.5 off the high. Growth, which is shown with the NASDAQ there at the bottom in orange, and EM are getting hit the hardest so far this year. So this slide on the safe reserve is a new page that we put together post notification to you guys of drawdown to present to the IAC and you guys as part of the monthly board package while we're in this period. Starting on the top left here, we're showing total safety reserve allocation versus the target. So right now we have 149 in the safety reserve compared to a target of 169. So right now, looking at the last few months and trends, we're running at about 9.4 million average outflows per month. So based on the 149 we have currently in the safety reserve, that would cover net outflows for the next 16 months or through July of 2023. If you look at the donut chart on the bottom left, it's not just the safety reserve that we have. In addition to that, we have $1.2 billion of liquid assets that we can use to refill it, to reallocate, to rebalance into it. So I just want to stress, it's not just the cash and the short-term bonds that we have that is liquid. in the portfolio. And then on the bottom right, this is a cash flow schedule looking forward through the end of Q2. Right now, we have $33.3 million in cash. With the $30 million coming over from IRM, we should be a little bit above target and then kind of back down to target towards the end of June. So expect to do this initial $30 million draw, and then we'll reassess what we need to draw monthly or quarterly from them going forward. So any questions on safe reserve and where we're at in the drawdown?
I just want to make a comment that this is not sort of crisis management with the safety reserve. This is sort of its primary purpose. And so, you know, we have some optionality in whether we draw from it or, you know, we fund it or somewhat. So this is how it's designed. This is, I just want to kind of make that point. Now, the reason it was created was the tail end of a crisis type, you know, thinking, but this is sort of somewhat business as usual in terms of how it's being used.
Yeah, and as a reminder, we tapped into it post-COVID in 2020, so yeah. Second time we've gone into this mode, and we're going to send this snapshot to the IC as part of the board tax every month, so they're fully in the loop on where we're at and what's going on with it as well. So we ended the quarter with $1.874 billion in NAV. This bridge chart year-to-date shows estimated total portfolio loss at 4.2%. We've had $33 million go out to pay benefit outflows, and then about an $83 million loss on investment value. Looking at the public markets only, which make up 70% of the total portfolio, there are a lot of numbers on this page, so I'm going to focus on a few. If we just look at the month-to-date column in the middle, you can see equity markets were basically flat in March, and then are up a little bit. Our portfolio was flat, and then fixed income got hit a bit harder. Looking at the year-to-date column in the middle, our portfolio is down 6.4, the public portfolio compared to a 60-40 benchmark, which is down 5.7%. So we're trailing that by a little bit. Most of that underperformance is within the equity portfolio. And looking down that page, you can see Invesco, the growth manager, is getting hit the hardest, down 15.5 compared to the benchmark 5.4. The ACWI growth benchmark is down about 10, so they're still underperforming the growth benchmark during this period. And then small cap is getting hit a little bit harder than the rest of the market as well, with Eastern Shore down 11. EM equity is holding up pretty good, and then our fixed income, given the short duration of the portfolio, is outperforming the multiverse benchmark. And then we added the three-year trailing performance as of March just to get some context to these numbers. You know, even with the underperformance drawdown year-to-date, we're still equities are still up 12 to 15% over the last 3 years. Looking at asset allocation, just a few things to point out here. The Northern Trust, halfway down the page, under equity, we're at $234 million, and that's what we planned to pull the $40 million from there to fund Eastern Shore or Global Alpha, so that'll come from within the equity portfolio. And then Pacific, the bank loans manager, given the low duration, holding it up. They're flat year-to-date, so they're a little bit above target, and if things go the way they've been going, they could be a potential rebalancing source as well. All right, this is a new chart we added, and this chart's so good, I'm just going to read it to you. This is showing the red dots are average or maximum intra-year peak-to-trough decline of the S&P. So we're only looking at the U.S. stock market here. But on average, the U.S. stock market, as measured by the S&P, is down 14% in a year. So our biggest peak-to-trough this year is 13, so it's not abnormal compared to the last 42 years, and then in those 42 years, we ended up with positive annual returns in 32 of them. So not saying we're going to get above back to positive this year, but just pointing out that this is not abnormal as far as what we've seen as far in the decline. This is the periodic table chart, just looking at the year-to-date of asset class returns. The only thing positive year-to-date is commodities, up 25.5%. And just a reminder, we have quite a bit of energy exposure. It's within the private equity portfolio. Unfortunately, it's with the managers we have the least amount of confidence in. So we do have some exposure there. We also have Riverstone, a private debt energy manager that should be doing pretty well in this environment. And then the 5% allocation to Hancock with the ag portfolio.
You know, at the audit committee, they talked about, we were talking about the hub and the likelihood that we'd see a write-up this year because of oil prices. I think they mentioned you did a back-of-the-envelope calculation. What do you see in terms of a potential write-up?
Yeah, so we're carrying it as a reminder. We're holding it at last year's audited value, which is our NAV is 67. Hoff had written it up to 115.
Right, 67?
67.
Okay.
67. Hoff, based on their Q3 cash statement, had written it up to 115. We didn't take that write-up. We looked at energy oil prices. Q3 and end of year were about the same. So I would expect, like, in that ballpark, the audit comes in about 115, 120-ish. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. It's in an auction sales process. You know, they're looking at not spot prices, but future prices. We're not sure what sales could have occurred during the year. So it's in a back-of-the-envelope approximation, but I would expect a sizable write-up this year over last year that we probably don't have a ton of confidence in, and we'll have to figure out what to do with that value.
The other thing that impacts it a lot is what buckets these assets fall in. So there's wells that are in probable, and there's different buckets,
sure.
And they have moved around quite a bit in the past. So all else being equal, we expect to
yeah,
that, but who knows?
A very complex valuation that, you know, we're taking a very simple approach to it, but, you know.
But historically, BDO has generally concurred with Huff's evaluation over time. So methodology, I mean, they look
at the methodology
and then the pricing based on current prices.
Yeah, I mean, they could have bad inputs, but the methodology is sound.
But I was at a meeting this week, and I mean, because of the Ukraine-Russia situation, I mean, people are thinking energy prices are going to stay high for quite a while.
Yeah, no doubt, if you can sell the assets, it's a much better environment now than it was a year ago. So we're hopeful that that can occur, but there's a lot of other factors that go into that investment and that GP. Tina, do you have a question?
I'm going to retract it. Thank you.
Okay. Save it for later, whatever.
Brian,
I was just going to say deja vu all over again, but to his point, it's a different environment because I feel like we had this exact same conversation 2 years with Huff, with their valuation almost doubling according to gas prices, and then the next year almost halving again. So this is a massive roller coaster, and it definitely doesn't affect.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't help us to write it up $60
yes.
million and then write it down $60 million
exactly.
next year and not have a good sense of what the outcome is going to be.
So on the asset class returns, you know, we've had generally a 30-year or so one-directional movement in interest rates down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been periods like in 94 and then in 2018 where there's been, you know, little blips up and the stock market, you know, responded poorly. I think this quarter, even though most things are repeated patterns, there is, you know, very few periods do you have where equities and fixed income,
mm-hmm.
you know, were down in the same quarter. So it would be interesting for Makita next time they're in, I think, to kind of comment and maybe educate us a little bit on that.
Okay.
Not that we're in some new thing, and I don't really have a whole lot of confidence the Fed will take rates back up to some neutral place where there's not negative real returns, but it'd just be kind of good to sort of get their perspective on that.
Okay.
And does that at all affect asset allocation and those sorts of things?
Are you just commenting that it looks like equities and fixed income are, like, in step as opposed to, like, the, you know, because it seems like it's been like that for some time now, that they go in the same trajectory, not in the same magnitude, but it has fixed income hasn't been the safe place to go when equities are kind of in
place. Yeah, everything's gone up for a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, and rates couldn't go, you know, any lower than they have, or I guess they could a little bit. So, you know, we're seeing, you know, we haven't seen inflation, you know, in most of our, you know, since our early lives, maybe except for a few people.
I remember 78, 79.
Maybe a picture of you then would be helpful. Sideburns and the
I'd pay for that.
But, you know, that you know, I never want to say, oh, we're in a new environment. We're not, but there's some differences from any other
right.
environment. Very high inflation, very, very high negative real interest rates. And I think that that does cause correlation due to kind of the core, you know, value of interest rates and risk premiums as it relates to fixed income and equities. And at some point, it'll go back to traditional, but how much higher do rates have to move? And will the Fed blink, you know, if there is a big downturn in the stock market or some other, you know, economic pressure point? And so I just think it'd be good to get some, you know, I don't love, like, state of the world talks all the time, but I think it is probably time for for people to give us their views.
Yeah,
would love, and I would love you guys from AEW, when you talk, to sprinkle that in as well into your thoughts.
Okay. Well, Makita's coming in June for their performance report, so we'll plan it that month.
Okay.
On the fourth schedule, the next big outside presentation coming in is Hancock to do a review of the ag portfolio and some properties they want to look at potentially disposing of and tweaking that portfolio. So they'll come in June as well. Any other questions on the portfolio before we move over to AEW? All right. I'll give a quick high-level intro and open session, and then we'll let Ron take over once we get into closed session. So. We have Ron Pastore and Mark Morrison here with us today for the first time in 3 years. They've been managing this portfolio for over 7 years now. They took it over from CDK. It is the largest investment in our portfolio at just under 10% and probably the most complex. The AEW portfolio drove overall distributions for DPFP in 2021 with over 70% of our total distributions coming from their portfolio. And we expect more of the same in 2022. So there's two investments remaining in their portfolio, like at a very high level. RCH, Red Consolidated Holdings, is a 50-50 real estate operating company that we're invested in that has many underlying properties, investments, equity interest, debt interest. We received $62 million of distributions from that portfolio in 2021. A bulk of that came from the sale of the Christopher Apartments at the Union Project in Uptown. And then the other investment in the portfolio is Camel Square, which was a 15.5-acre site in Phoenix that we owned wholly outside of RCH. You guys approved a JV investment into a redevelopment project there in April of last year, and then we had sold four of the six parcels and two remain, so we've received $44 million in distributions from that investment. So with that, we'll move over to closed session and let Ron talk about his portfolio and interest rates and whatever else.
Great.